so well.
7:14 on the Mark and Jim Show on this Wednesday, January 14th. 633-1460. I thought of a solution to my problem.
The kid kicking you in the middle of the night.
My 5-year-old, who Shelby, who gets on my wife's and I of bed and kicks me in the junk all morning long.
Right.
I could just wear a cup to bed.
Yeah, you could do that.
That would fix part of the problem. But then again, I got to wear a cup to bed. How uncomfortable is that?
Yeah.
You know, what's next, a helmet and gloves? Come on.
Thank goodness your kid doesn't wear her shoes to bed. Some kids have been known to do that.
If she does show up in her shoes, we're gonna have some words. 7:14 is the time. On the line with us now from Reason Magazine, one of my favorite columnists, Matt Welch, joining us talking about the bailouts and GOP and whatnot. Good morning, Matt. Welcome to the Mark and Jim Show.
Thanks so much for having me. Good morning.
I appreciate you joining us this morning, Matt. Wanted to talk to you about a couple things here. Speaking of bailouts, you know, we've had these, you know, all these bailouts now for almost every industry, and we're starting to hear, and I don't know if it's become really organized yet, but maybe that's coming later, but folks in the newspaper industry are talking about needing a bailout. Good idea or bad idea? And give us your thoughts on that.
Horrendously craptacular idea. Is that the category?
Okay.
He said craptacular on this show.
Offensively, putridly awful idea. Newspapers, the newspaper industry in the United States has been among a handful of the most profitable industries for a century, and especially in the last 50 years and even until today. I mean, people, especially on the left, like to talk about, Walmart's taking over everything or whatever, McDonald's. Walmart and McDonald's almost never in their history have had double-digit profit margins. The newspaper industry, even this year, has profit margins between 10 and 20%, and for much of the previous decade, more than 20% a year. That's a license to print money. They've gotten fat, happy, and lazy, and then just in the last few years, they've taken a hammering because all these companies that went public, their shareholders suddenly don't believe in their future, and when that happens, it becomes awful difficult to continue to raise money and continue to do a lot of things. So they've had to downsize in newsrooms, and suddenly when that happens, you have some journalists, certainly not all, but some journalists and a lot of journalism professors and professional chin strokers and the like saying, well, you know, newspapers are so important for democracy that it's very important that we bail them out, that we preserve them. What a lot of people don't realize is that there already is on record the great legislator, Richard Nixon, helped them put together something called the Newspaper Preservation Act of 1970 that was supposed to keep newspapers from going underground. It allows for joint operating agreements between two large dailies in places like Seattle, Washington. And in most of those cities, I think there's 28 originally, even though the papers have been allowed to pool their content, same thing happened in San Francisco, right, between the Examiner and the Chronicle for years. They pool their content. They maybe, you know, publish a special Sunday edition together, and eventually the weaker of the two goes bankrupt. It's classic. So, no, it's a terrible, terrible idea. I think most of the bailout itself is a terrible idea. But when we're talking about journalism, the press, the idea of government meddling in the affairs of the practice of the First Amendment, I think that's just awful.
We're talking with Matt Welch, editor-in-chief of Reason Magazine and also Reason.com, a great website, one of my favorites, actually. Matt,
thanks.
Newspapers, are they you think they're done?
No. Here's why. The newspaper itself, just like the automobile, or you know, the internal combustion engine, or going to the movie theater, or a CD, an album length kind of thing. These are wonderful technologies. I mean, there still isn't anything better than having a newspaper in your fingertips when you're reading it. You can flip through it. You can go straight to the sports section. If he were still alive, you can go straight to the Herb Cain. You know where it is. There's something about the technology that is still useful. And you see in all these different industries, they're all going through growing pains or actually shrinking pains. But the foundational technology is still great. People will still go to the movie theaters because there ain't nothing better to do on a date, you know? And people will still pick up the newspaper and still get value from organizations that have 100 people chasing news every day and reflecting a certain value. Now, they're going to look different, certainly, and, you know, they're going to probably evolve, I think, into more explicitly kind of premium, almost NPR-ish type of instruments. You know, you'll have a New York Times wannabe in a market, and then maybe you'll have some little tabloid kind of papers in the market too, but they're not going to look like they did in 1983. Thank mm-hmm. God. I mean, they were great, but we have a huge variety of choice in this country of different kinds of media now, and a proliferation. There's a boom of journalism happening. It's just not happening in a newspaper newsroom, and that's very traumatic for the people who, for the last several years and decades, have been among the least competitive and most overpaid people in the country. I feel for them. I've been them. I worked at the LA Times and other places. I understand the pain, but we're undergoing a transformation. They'll still be there. It's just like network TV news. Yeah. You know, Katie Couric is not going to have as many viewers 5 years from now as she does today if she has a job. However, more people are going to watch her show than are going to listen to yours or read my magazine.
Mm-hmm. Matt, one of the things I want to ask you about was regarding newspapers and where they're going. Is part of the decline, is it all due to technology, or is part of the decline of newspapers kind of a reaction from a segment of the population that sees their views, their lifestyles, their opinions basically denied, you know, a forum? You know, you don't see very much in very many newspapers that have a conservative editorial stance or will give equal play to conservative opinions. You know, we're seeing it now with the bailout madness. You can never pick up a newspaper, any major newspaper, and see an op-ed piece from someone who is completely against the bailout and for moral and financial reasons and a number of other things. Those types of opinions aren't allowed on the editorial pages of the newspapers. And I'm just wondering if part of the dwindling of the newspaper business is due to that a lot of readers feel disaffected from the business.
I think definitely. I mean, I agree with the spirit, not necessarily the letter of your critique. Keep in mind, by far and away, the most syndicated published columnist in this country on the op-ed pages is George Will. And he's a conservative columnist, and he's been dead set against the bailout, and very entertainingly so, I think. That said, what you have to think about is newspapers up until, let's say, 1960, 1950, something like that. It was an incredibly brawling, highly competitive form. Not only did you have, you know, let's take Los Angeles, my hometown, you'd have, you know, 10 newspapers, daily newspapers in English, but they had multiple, you know, versions throughout the day, the morning, the evening, the Bulldog, and there were other versions. And there was a French daily newspaper in Los Angeles. It used to be a highly competitive industry. Then there was this wave of incredible consolidation that all sort of coalesced around 1960 after World War II. When that happened, there in most cities there remained only one dominant voice, and that dominant voice then started to wear the clothes of sort of so-called objective, you know, reporting. We're going to be impartial. And a lot of this actually improved the quality of journalism. Before then, newspapers were a lot more explicitly partisan. There'd be a Republican and a Democratic newspaper in a town like Santa Barbara. They had two. When they cloaked themselves in this clothes of objectivity, that was also a way for them to try to ape the New York Times. This is the interesting and a longer story, but, you know, the New York Times is actually not a, you know, monopolistic paper like a lot of their imitators are. They're in a competitive market, and they're going after the sort of liberal elite. But there is a New York Post and the Daily News and a Wall Street Journal there. But when all these other newspapers that were monopolists in their market aped the values of the New York Times, they alienated all these other types of readers who were out there. And it's inevitable that you're going to turn off people politically. You're going to turn off types of people who, for instance, like my wife, want to read more about, like, crime and gossip and stuff. Newspapers are too high-minded to look at a bunch of different categories, and they don't really realize their own biases and how they've become cemented and institutionalized. And I'm not even talking about politics. I'm just talking about preferences of the types of stuff that they like to cover. So, yes, all of that. They engaged in monopolistic behavior unchecked for nearly half a century, and surprise, their readers fled in droves, and they haven't been able to react to a world in which their monopoly is not as valuable as it used to be.
Matt Welsh, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, editor-in-chief of Reason Magazine and Reason Online also as well. Or, I'm sorry, Reason.com is the website address. He brings out some really salient points, Mark.
Oh, yeah.
You know, newspapers aren't dead, but they'll have their place, although it's a lot smaller is really what his point was.
And we ran a little long with him, and I didn't ask him the one thing, but it would have been interesting to get a reaction on the comment that when the Monterey Herald printed their editorial about a month or so ago urging a bailout for newspapers, I wrote a letter to the editor saying, what about how are you going to bite the hand that feeds you? You know, if you're going to get money from us taxpayers, how are you going to be a government watchdog? That was the letter they didn't print.
Of course not. You know why? It made sense. It was logical. And it's a very, very good point, Mark.
7:24 is our time of the Mark and Jim Show. What do you got to come up here, buddy?
Coming up, you know, what's that Christmas tree? Is that still up in your house?
It is still up, and it's going to come down this weekend. I know what I'm going to do with it.
That's what you said last weekend.
That's right.
Also, ACLU 1, Jesus 0. Prayer in schools, where, who, what, when, what, how? Coming up on the Mark and Jim Show. Hang tight.
7:25. Good morning.
Has dieting left you feeling tired, sluggish, and irritable, looking flabby and out of shape? Hi, I'm Dr. Don Nebel, creator of Hydroxydrine. When we lose weight, we're supposed to feel great, right? Yet most of us don't. We experience